We're talking about voodoo as practiced in West African countries, where they take this pretty seriously. When we come back, a discussion about the zombie legends, whether or not there's any truth to that. And then we move on to Mongolia. And then at the bottom of the hour, open up the phone lines with your questions for my guest, John Alexander. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. John, I'm trying to figure out whether there's some other kind of rational explanation for these guys putting burning coals in their mouths and on their arms and everything. You touched on it briefly, but whether or not they could have some kind of substance or plant that they put on their mouth to protect themselves ahead of time. I suppose even if that were the case, that it's something that we would find of interest. Western science could find a lot of uses for something like that.
Fire departments would love it. Yeah, I'm quite convinced, A, that they didn't use anything, and B, if they did, we would be on that in a heartbeat. That would be just amazing. And again, it's not just like a brief contact with these burning objects. They just hold it there for a substantial period of time. I would expect the skin to burn. Again, I would like to go back, and I'm hoping to be able to do that and take in the kind of instrumentation that would give us, a better understanding of what's really going on. But it's not the simple explanations that the skeptics have provided us.
It would seem like there would be a lot of stuff that Western science could learn from that, if they allowed it a study like that to happen. Has there been anything like it? I know there have been some studies of voodoo practices in Haiti by American academics, but I don't know if they've been to.
Well, you don't find the scientific community. Now, the shamans that I've dealt with more openly in the Amazon, for instance, their knowledge of herbology is just amazing. And of course, what's come out of that is what they call biopiracy. In other words, big pharma sends folks down to try and find out how these things work and come back and synthesize it, and they make a gazillion dollars, and the people who discovered it don't. Now, and what we heard here, and I have to emphasize heard, because we didn't have a chance to follow up, but the shamans and voodoo priests definitely have understanding of herbs and the use of them in ways that some of them we know. For instance, the malaria, as you know, is a huge problem in these areas. And they've had, some native thing, native plants that have been able to treat malaria to a degree. It is still one of the largest killers, particularly of children under five throughout Africa. But they have a number of things that are available. Probably the most amazing one that I heard, but again, cannot substantiate, but again, Noah said they actually did have potions that could bring back the dead, but not quite like the zombie tradition of the movies, of course, but that such things do exist, but the knowledge is kept very, very secret. And again, passed from, clan member to clan member, and not even outside your clans. Each one has to discover the processes for themselves.
Are they using any kind of plants in the way that those in the shamans in Brazil and the Amazon are using ayahuasca? Any kind of hallucinogenics that are used to go into some kind of altered
Did not
states?
see that in this area, and we specifically asked about it. But there are some other countries, Cameroon, for instance, has some that are very, very powerful. But in these areas, the biggest thing that we saw for trance induction actually is drumming, and that seems to be one of the common themes that we've seen in shamans and almost around the world is the use of sound to induce certain trance states.
You mentioned about the stories you heard about bringing back the dead. Anything else in the vein of zombies? I mean, I know there was some. I think it was Harvard that went to Haiti and did that work that became
Right.
sort of the
The
basis
Serpent
of
and
the
the
Serpent and the
Rainbow and
Rainbow.
that. Well, the One of the conventional hypotheses is use of something called tetrodotoxin, which is a neuropoison. It comes from blowfish. Very, very powerful. Generally induces death very quickly, almost instant paralysis. The concept was that they would use that to put a person down and then have other drugs that could bring them back, but that the mind in that process would be severely damaged, and thus you'd get somebody who was severely mentally degraded in the process. Don't have a lot of evidence to support that, but they also said that they're really unhappy with the Hollywood portrayal, and particularly with the notion that, you know, if the zombie bites you, then you become a zombie, and this can be passed on through, you know, from human to human, and nothing to indicate that at all.
Before we leave the African part of the discussion and move to Mongolia, I'm struck in the photographs about just the abject poverty that you see everywhere, how little these people have to eat, and also by the remnants of slavery, how profoundly it is still affects them. And, we look at it as something in the history books, but, I mean, it's still something that's right there with them.
I've got to say, when we went to Ouidah, which was there was a major slave market there, and actually walked the slave road from the market to holding areas, because the slaves were held sometimes for months before they were shipped. Now, most of these were sent to Brazil, and the biggest slave trader there was Francisco de Souza, who had made friends with the king, and then the local kings became rich. As a matter of fact, the people with money in Africa today, or in that part of Africa, quite a bit of that came as residual of the slave trade, because it went on for 300 years. Also might mention that probably a majority of those captured did not make it out of the country, and many more died, of course, en route, because the conditions were absolutely abysmal. But when you go there and see it, I mean, this is, you can feel the oppression, quite frankly.
Let's move on to Mongolia. Much different belief system, I guess, but equally, I don't know if it's quite as dramatic, but tell us what the beliefs of these shamans are, the reindeer shamans in particular, what their basic belief structure is.
Well, one I might mention in both cases that in all of these areas, reincarnation is a fundamental aspect of the belief system, that spirits leave, human spirits leave, may go someplace and come back. And that was true with the shamans. They, too, have lots of spirits, and the predominant ones, the sky spirits, mountain spirits, river spirits, as well as spirits of departed who come back and communicate through them.
The Mongolians, you sent me a note that said that they managed to keep their spiritual beliefs alive even under communist rule. Was that a tricky business?
Actually, it was, because, you know, the communists were atheists by nature, and, well, all religions had been suppressed under communist rule, and that includes, of course, all of the former Soviet Union. But these traditions were, passed down, again, through kind of an underground network, because, again, it works. And, of course, poverty, I think, is one of the things that drives this, as opposed to more Western technology and medical facilities.
So the reindeer shamans in Mongolia, to go find them, at least what it looks like, is you had to pack in on horses or to go to the places you needed to see.
We ended up doing that to get to where the reindeer people were. That is correct. We drove as far as one could drive. And I mentioned their roads were sort of a vector. They're When we pulled off of the road from the NUM, we did not see another gravel road for over 2 weeks. So you kind of said, yeah, we're going to go west and then we're going north, you know. But you can only go so far. We hit the end of that, and then to the reindeer people are nomads, and they follow the reindeer herds, which they have domesticated. And so then we got on horseback and rode for 2 days to get into the camp. It turned out where we thought they were initially, as we approached that, somebody came out and a rider coming the other way said, no, they've moved and they're back over another mountains, about 9,000 feet high where we crossed over, lots of glaciers, very, very tricky terrain and down in there. But
tell me about ceremonies that you either saw or participated in. What jumps out at you as particularly impressive?
Well, we had several. Well, the drumming, of course, is ubiquitous. I started on the first one with Udval. What was unique about her was that we were in Ulaanbaatar, the capital. Might point out that Mongolia is the least densely populated country in the world. It is very, very large, three times the size of France, and has only 3 million people, and at least half of them live in the capital. So you do have shamans there servicing those folks. We did have two really strange incidents that happened, just totally unexplained or unexplainable. In one, we were attending a shaman ceremony. It was drumming. It was night, very low light level, and something dropped on the floor. We heard this light clunk sound and picked it up. Now, normally I would have just not even considered that, you know, of major interest, because clearly he could have, you know, palmed an item and dropped it or had it drop out of his cape or something of that nature. What was most impressive to me is we picked it up and it was given to me and said I should keep it for 3 years, but that all of the locals who have seen him do these ceremonies, you know, many, many times, had never seen anything like that. They were totally intrigued with this. So it told me this was obviously not part of his regular repertoire. The other incident that
happened... Wait, before you leave that, what is it? What is the object? What does it look like?
It looks like a little round ball. I'll show it to you sometime. I'm actually going to take it and have it analyzed to try and figure out what it is. Looks sort of like a plastic marble, but certainly not a standard marble as you think of it. You know, about half an inch diameter sphere.
And poof, it just comes out of nowhere.
And again, very low light level. So could he have palmed it or had it in something and drop out? Absolutely. Again, what made me most interested was the reaction of everybody else who's seen this before. The other one that happened was not in a ceremony, but you see on there the tents that we were living in, and we tore the tent down every day, put it up every night, self-contained. We would put ground pads down and then sleeping bags, of course. But every morning, the thing is totally empty, literally pick it up and shake it. So we know there's nothing residual in there. And about the eighth day, we were camped near a river, woke up in the morning, and between the two paths, between Victoria and I, is lying a shiny 50 pence Australian coin. Now, how a coin just appears, you know, an Australian coin appears in northern Mongolia, I have no way of answering that. We were the only ones in the tent on that.
Well, do you ask the shamans? Do you ask them, hey, how do you do this? Are they open about how they do it or what it means?
I mean, this is one that I don't know. I mean, I mean, everybody was as surprised as we were. So it clearly these are things, not things that happen on a continuous basis at all.
Did you tell me that a lot of the ceremonies involving the priests or the shamans there in this religion, and I don't even know what you call it, that they go into these trances?
Correct. Yeah, so, they do that, and then they connect the spirit. What they'll say is that the spirits literally take them over, and in general, they say, we don't know what happened during the trance because the spirit had taken over. There was one occasion in which the spirit is standing there and literally gets knocked backwards rather abruptly and said that he had made contact with Victoria's father, who has passed on and was, passed on private messages to her. Again, none of this was anything that could be externally verified. There were some of the things that were predicted. I mentioned before the hearing thing. I can say that did not come to pass, and I still can't hear very well, but they had promised that. But
I'm trying to figure out if there are big picture comparisons that you can make. I mean, you've traveled the Amazon and went through the ayahuasca ceremonies and dealt with shaman there. You saw these guys, the voodoo priests in Africa. You've seen the shamans of Mongolia. There are some commonalities there, obviously. Are there big picture lessons to be learned and big picture conclusions that you've come to, or is it still too early for that?
I think there's certain vectors we're on. One of the commonalities that we've seen across the board, I mentioned earlier, and that's reincarnation. That life continues beyond death, that the spirits do come back sometimes, and many of them say, well, they're, reborn. The use of drumming and repetitive kinds of motion and sound to induce trances. The biggest difference that I see around the world between the Western world and basically everybody else is the willingness to accept these within their belief system. You know, we have a very materially oriented belief structure that just eliminates the possibility of some of these strange things happening. There, the belief systems are much more accommodating. And I've certainly seen that in Brazil, where I've dealt with, very high-level folks, and they have no problem at all with understanding and accepting, these alternative healing processes and, all of the things that go with that.
Meaning accepting it and taking it for real.
Western belief system that it can't be, therefore it isn't.
John, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, and then I have a question, if we have time, about the journey for inner space, trying to understand things like aliens and interdimensional beings, whether that connects with the spirit world that you've been investigating. Paul Revere and the Raiders take us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. Coming up at the top of this hour, Mr. UFO Hunter himself, prolific author Bill Burns, will be joining me to talk about his latest project. For now, we'll be taking your phone calls and questions for John Alexander about voodoo priests and Mongolian shaman that he has encountered in a recent trip across the wilds of the world. Stay with us. Much more on Coast to Coast AM to come. Couple of quick questions, John, before we go to the folks who are hanging on the phone lines. You mentioned about voodoo as the name of the religion in West Africa. What is the name for the religion there in Mongolia? Or does it have one?
I did not hear of a formalized name to it.
And then do they call it a religion, or is it just a way of life? What?
It is. Or the way of life, I guess they would call it religion, but I'm not sure that it has, a formal name like Christianity or Judaism.
Is it the equivalent of what you described in Africa, where the shamans are also the healers in
Oh, yes.
Mongolia?
Yeah, very, very much. That's why you go to them. And they go, the people go for the same reasons, to find out what's going on. Many of them use them as counselors, how to make relationships better, how to heal, how to protect the families. Very, very, very similar.
I don't want to get too far off the track, but did you have a chance to ask any of the shaman or the priests about some of our other favorite topics, the mysteries of UFOs or aliens or interdimensional beings? Any of that stuff fit into any of their religious beliefs?
Well, it's interesting because I asked all about the UFOs, and for the most part, it was not on their radar, not something they know about. Now, that having said that, when we were out with the reindeer people, ran into a woman there who spoke fluent English. Interesting, had been raised in Colorado and then gone back, but she said that a few years ago. In the valleys there were nightly UFOs just going back and forth, and the kids would go out and chase them and whatnot, and then they just gradually disappeared. When I talked to the guides and the shamans about that, they just generally had no knowledge and didn't seem to understand what we're talking about. Now, when you the broader question that you've implied is you're dealing with spirits and things like that, and that fits into my personal bent that there are consciousness interactions with beings of some kind, and these have been reported throughout human history. And what the shamans and priests seem to be doing is attempting to access that sort of contact.
Yeah, we call them aliens, and we think they're from other planets, but we really don't know. We give them different names, and they take different shapes. But there's been interaction between humans and other kinds of intelligences reported forever.
That's correct. And our notion that they have to be little green guys or come on spaceships is actually fairly new, because, as you rightly point out, these contacts have been reported throughout human history.
Let's take a couple of calls on our wildcard line. Andrew in Virginia. Hi, Andrew. Hello.
Colin, the question I have is, these shamans, do they have any treatments or anything they can do for people who have heart conditions like me? I need a heart transplant, and I've been turned down. I've called and actually spoke with Mr. Norrie before about that.
John?
They do have natural herbs that they recommend for a wide variety of things. And in fact, our wranglers went out several days while we were there and would pick various kinds of flowers and crops to bring back. That said, let's understand that our life expectancy is in the upper 70s and theirs is in the 40s and 50s. So Western medicine does work pretty well.
So if I were you, Andrew, I would it doesn't hurt to explore a variety of options, but I wouldn't give up on waiting for the heart transplant. Best of luck to you. I hope you hang in there. Antonio in Round Rock, Texas. What's on your mind, Antonio? Antonio is gone. Let's talk to our first-time caller line. Dora in Jersey City, New Jersey, is from Cuba, and I'm told.
Dora, I have broken English. I hope you understand. I am
Okay.
Cuban.
Yes.
Okay? A guru. I grew up in a spiritualista family. It's different than guru, but guru is around in the town, and I grew up in that. To me, guru is negative energy. Spiritualista is different. I will say very beautiful. And spiritualista is a medium. I'm born medium. Other people are medium later. But for example, Hollywood, you was talking about Hollywood, they do those things that may be over the line because they don't know. Cuban, I was raised not to talk. What I do is because I am big mouth. So I talk about spiritualism. For example, in Hollywood, people are into the paranormal.
Paranormal, right.
Many times they play with Ouija board and all that, and they don't see nothing. I go there, and I see everything they are looking for. It's different. But Buru is completely different. Do you understand my English?
I'm understanding some of it, Dora. You're saying that you think voodoo is evil the way you saw it practiced. And this...
The practice is negative.
Right.
No, okay? Because you only have to look the people that practice voodoo. Look at Cuba. How is Cuba now?
Yeah.
Cuba is very different to the Cuba before.
Hey, Dora, let me ask John a question about, based on your comments there. John, is it possible that the voodoo practiced in Cuba and Haiti is different from what you saw in Africa?
Well, let's understand it's a derivative of the Dahomeyan Empire in Africa. What happened, again, this gets back to the slave trade. The majority of the slaves that were shipped over were animists themselves and went not to North America, but to Brazil and the Caribbean. And so they brought these practices with them. How it is applied, you know, has changed over time, and there's many different branches in what they call houses that have derived from this. Again, I think one of the main differences is that poverty level and being such as it is in West Africa, this is much more of an integral part of their life. And again, what we saw was the vast majority of it being used for positive applications. I'm well aware of the negative trends that have also emerged. In my view, it's kind of like all of technology. It's a matter of application. You know, it's it's inherently neutral and can be used, you know, based on the will of the operator.
Like a hammer. Like a hammer or a gun or it could be used for good
exactly.
or bad. Dora, are you still there?
Honey, I am listening to what you say. That is, I was silent listening to everything.
Okay.
Can I say something, or you want to ask me something?
I'm just going to ask you one quick question because we got other people. But you still practice? You still practice your religion?
I grew up a medium in Cuba. It's a secret. Okay, what I am telling you, I am not supposed to tell you, but it's a secret. Some children born medium. Some develop later. I born. It's different. Oh. My family is for generations. Millions. For example, about three generations. They do a lot of things that you can hardly believe that Hollywood really would love to know, but they don't know because it's keeping secret. Like the ghosts, we can see the ghosts. In Hollywood, it's a lot of ghosts around there because people are into the paranormal, a lot of them. But when that I see it, I don't say nothing.
Hey, Dora, I'm gonna interrupt you because we got other people on the phones, but I'd really appreciate it if you would send me an email. I'd like to stay in touch with you, okay?
Yes, we have.
Yes.
But I will find out. Do you want me to write to you?
I'll tell you what, you hang on the line and our gal, Gina there, will get a number for you and we'll figure out a way to get in contact. I'd like to learn more from you. And I thank you for calling. East of the Rockies, Tom in St. Louis with a question for John Alexander.
How you doing, hey, John and George? How you guys this morning?
Okay.
You were looking for a commonality earlier, and I would just like to point out, she kind of touched on the subject. All the countries I've noticed that you've mentioned that practice voodoo and any other alternative religion, all are mired in poverty and the people generally are suffering. I'm wondering if the author has seen are even investigated to any extent, rather such alternative thinking is occurring in our own government, either in plain sight or behind closed doors. In other words, i.e. the Freemasonry or Illuminati type religions. And I'll take my answers off the air.
Well, I wouldn't call the Masons or Illuminati religions by any stretch of the imagination. The poverty issue, I think, that he brought up is quite cogent. Though I will mention that specifically when I've dealt in countries like Brazil that are emerging and very intelligent, articulate, wealthy people who still engage in, you know, these alternative healing things. I mentioned John of God on other occasions. So it's not exclusive yet, but certainly a piece of it has to do with, you know, a search for well-being within the society, and you're there with there's no infrastructure to provide the basic services that we see in the West. Again, I think we're hampered, though, because of the materialistic view that says these things can't happen and it's all, you know, folklore and hooey.
Well, I guess you could ask, it's a chicken and egg kind of question. Are they, do they believe in voodoo and shamanism because they're poor and uneducated, or they believe in it because they work and in spite of it? Or I guess you did answer that in part.
Well, I think the answer is yes. And it is a chicken and egg issue.
West of the Rockies, Brenda in San Francisco. Hi, Brenda. Hello, Brenda. Is Brenda, I'm sorry? Sue, it's Sue in San Francisco.
No,
or
I'm
Sue in Chico.
Chico.
Okay. Chico. Sue, what's on your mind?
I have a question for Mr. John. I was wondering if voodoo has any application specifically in medicine regarding grand mal seizures, because I have them, and I was wondering if there's any application there.
I am loath to get into any kind of thing that sounds like medical diagnosis.
No, I don't mean a diagnosis.
I'm a firm believer in Western medicine, and I do think there are alternatives. As we mentioned, they do go out and find herbs that have medical application. But, you know, I really recommend you, you know, consult your physician.
John, I'll ask you this. Back to the discussion about inner space. We've talked about it before in association with the ranch in Utah and other sort of weirdness hotspots around the world, how people search for truth and understanding of the world around us, our place in the universe and the nature of reality itself. You're a man of science. You're a world traveler. You were advisor to governments and militaries and things of that sort. You take this stuff seriously, though. And am I overstating it to say that pursuing the investigation of what I'd call inner space is a way to figure some of this stuff out?
I think absolutely, yeah, that's correct. I mean, certainly things like meditation and other alternatives for getting to know oneself better, and that's been a fundamental tenet of many of these philosophies and religions throughout, you know, the thing of know yourself. And certainly one of our problems is we live in a very busy world, I think somewhat to our detriment. I'm not sure that, you know, Twitter and whatnot are necessarily good things, because we've learned to just have so much noise going on and lost contact with our inner self.
Well, I was going to say the same thing about loss of contact with nature, with the world
Absolutely.
Around us. We don't
Absolutely.
Go outside and look at the stars anymore.
With the light and sound pollution, ecologically are huge issues. A good one you mentioned before are loss of contact with the food chain. And as I mentioned, our guides, when they were going out into the forest, would deal with the spirits. And if they were going to take something, they would ask permission to take from it. most of our society has no idea where the woods are. So there might be spirits out there or something of that nature that should be invoked.
One other question. We got about 2 minutes or so. You mentioned to me that Victoria in Mongolia had gone into a trance state.
Yes.
Tell me about how she achieved it, what she hoped to get out of it, and what ultimately happened.
Well, ultimately came out of it, but there was no doubt, particularly in the last shaman that we visited, it was supposedly very powerful. There's a movie called The Horse Boy, which talks about an American family with an autistic child who went in and was treated fairly successfully. And when we were, before we even began the ceremony, today on the video, you can see her just starting to clearly go into trance. And that lasted for, I've got to say, several hours and kind of gradually dissipated. This is something that she is willing to do and accept. I'd be a bit more hesitant myself, but she's a bit more adventurous in that area, willing to... I'm a control freak, I admit that. She's willing to give up control over certain things.
So coming out of it, what did she get out of it?
This gets back to your question about going within. And it's kind of an inner understanding and knowing, and it's sort of ineffable and hard to explain how it fits together, but it's certainly part of her basic being and philosophy.
Did she have to take something to get in that state?
Oh, no. This was just a field effect, and I mentioned that having been around ayahuasca and things and not taking it, I'm convinced some of these things you actually get a field effect. And I think it's just being around the powerful shamans that if you're sensitive to these issues, it might get back to what your Cuban friend mentioned there about mediumship. I'm sure there have been many, many people on this program that have talked about interaction with spirits and whatnot, and it's a matter of being open to it.
John Alexander, thank you for sharing your stories about Mongolia and West Africa. I hope you do something with it. I hope you write something up about it, and I hope people will give it a fair shake and give it a fair listen. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, everyone, the UFO hunter himself, Bill Burns. Stay with us. Much more to come on Coast to Coast AM. Fleetwood Mac takes us into the break.